Welcome to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. This is episode 44 on the 2nd of February 2016. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. It's great to have you all back. Welcome to our returning listeners. Welcome to our first time listeners. And welcome to our audience in the States. It's so great to know that it's not just a bunch of our mates here in Australia listening to us. You guys have really helped popularise us and, or at least increase our numbers, and we couldn't be more pleased to have you along.
Ecstatic, my friend, ecstatic. What are we doing today in the Countdown,
Paul? Today is a, for new listeners, today is a regular kind of show we do every 7-8 weeks. We are talking about our top 10, last 10. The last 10 or so films that we have seen that we haven't spoken about on the podcast before, we are ranking them in order of enjoyment. So starting with the worst at 10, and ending in a really positive, nice way with the best film that we've seen of late, our number one.
Yeah.
Now, there's no linkage between these films whatsoever, apart from the fact that we've watched them. So there's no common theme at all. And we have one podcast to thank for this. It is Cine Realists, Zach and James, who pioneered this idea and graciously gave us permission to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get there, we do have one semi-regular segment to do first. I am, of course, talking about checking it out. And for once, I'm not talking about my cock.
Yeah, because I already did it. What? All right. Fucking check it out! Yes, Check It Out is the segment where Paulie and I check out movie news from over the week and share a little item of interest that we thought was kind of, you know, something you might want to talk about. For this week, my Check It Out. Do you recall? I know you're a fan of the show 24, Paulie.
Oh, very much.
You're right. More so than I. I don't think I saw as many of the seasons as you did.
I've seen every single episode.
And can you tell me, in the one that was recently, like, the little movie thing that they did, the TVC, or what movie
was it? It was 12 episodes.
12 episodes. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Did it end? Like, was there an ending?
Not a definitive one.
Like, okay.
Jack Bauer wins the day, and that's the end of
it. That's it, so he didn't die or anything?
He walks off into the distance. No.
Okay. All right. Well, they are rebooting.
What?
Yes, or they actually have a new show called 24, Legacy. Ooh. And they have found their new Jack Bauer.
Okay, this is absolute news to me.
Yeah, Fox has given the lead role to Corey Hawkins. He was a star of Straight Outta Compton, and recently an addition to The Walking Dead. He's playing Eric Carter, who's not, obviously, he's not being Jack Bauer. He's a guy who grew up in a rough neighborhood, but turned his life around as an army ranger.
Huh.
But this is just the same deal, where they won't show anyone taking a shit. Even though it's the 24-hour period.
Of course not. Because I cut away during those moments. There's more than one thread going.
But I like to make shit jokes. Well, you know, I mean, this is kind of interesting. I didn't even know they were going with it all.
This is, as I said, news to me. Wow, okay, so that means that officially then, if they're moving on to a new iteration of the show, that Kiefer Sutherland has officially hung up the spurs.
Shit. I mean, he's old now. Probably can't do all the things he used to do, but I thought it was something that I'm going to check it out. I'd actually tailed off with the last season of series, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But this looks like a fresh take on it, and they haven't released a lot of things yet. They haven't released about what the format's going to be, if it's going to be the real time or whatever, but yeah.
Well, it has to be. That's the gimmick. So even though it was called 24, the last series, I guess perhaps with Kiefer Sutherland, was just 12 episodes.
Yeah.
And took place over a 12-hour period with maybe, if I recall correctly, they skipped ahead at one point for a sort of wrap-up, but either way, it wasn't 24, so I guess they kind of realized.
Yeah, so they could play loose and fast with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's I like the concept, I like the action, I like the betrayals, I like the unexpected character deaths, as long as they preserve all of those things.
Let me ask you, was season one the best of the original 24?
No.
It wasn't?
Not a chance, because if you watch season one, it's clearly structured to only be 12 episodes to start with. And then they go, we got green lit for a whole season. Great, let's now make it 24-hour period.
They picked it up again.
And they've had to restart writing and create this whole other bad guy, which was Dennis Hopper from Vague Recollection, and which was not even hinted at in the first half of the show. So it doesn't, as a whole series, a whole 24 episodes, it doesn't flow nicely.
Mm.
Season 2, look, there's a theory about 24 which basically goes the odd-numbered seasons are good, the even-numbered seasons are a bit pants.
Right, so 3 was good?
3 was great. 5 arguably is where it peaked.
I did like 5.
5 was excellent. And 6 was terrible. 7 wasn't bad. And moving on from there.
Oh, Star Wars syndrome.
Mm.
I mean, Star Trek syndrome.
Star Trek, yes. Yeah. Okay, well, my news then. Check this out, Wayne.
Okay.
Will surprise exactly no one.
Please, go on.
Terminator Genesis sequel has been removed from Paramount's schedule. It's gone. Arnie is gone. The Terminator franchise is effectively dead in the water. And we have one... Well, we'll probably have lots of people to blame for it, but I'm going to pin it on one person.
Good old Jai.
Jai Courtney, series killer extraordinaire.
Now, is Jai in the Suicide Squad movie?
He is. So you can get that. No,
I would love to see that movie prove you wrong, because I'm hearing good things about Suicide Squad.
Well, we can hear good things 6 months out from its release, no problem.
Well, sure.
I heard good things about Snakes on a Plane all the way till it was released.
That's a very good point. Okay. And how are you feeling about this? Like, I mean, you, like, screw this whole thing. No. You're happy to say goodbye to that Terminator series?
I am. I think it's done its dash. It needs to be on. Maybe, I think Justin from the Epic Film Guys said on their recent podcast, maybe it'd be worthwhile just completely fresh take, completely reinventing it. Not a reboot, but look, let's just go in a different direction. He was perhaps suggesting that they could just show the actual war. And have a whole film about that rather than...
That would be fertile storytelling ground, I think. Yeah.
It's time to move on. Let it die. Perhaps the biggest kick in the ass then, or the insult to add to the injury, is what Paramount have replaced it with.
Oh, what?
According to IGN, Baywatch, a feature film comedy starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Zac Efron, and Alexandra Daddario.
Yeah, you know what? You kind of had me until you said The Rock.
I can't believe I had you at Baywatch.
No, because I think it's going to be funny. If you make it... Like, Starsky and Hutch is already making fun of the show. So, it actually... Starsky and Hutch was a good movie. I thought that was good. Good comedy. Okay. So, if they can make a meta enough to make it amusing, it could work. But then The Rock... Fuck The Rock, man. Yes, you're right. It is kind of a hard thing to replace your movie.
We got rid of
this
one. But we're putting this in there, because it's got The Rock in it. And he's just as good as Terminator. No, fuck.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear that studio conversation.
What should we replace it with? We need something that's equally as hard-hitting, that has the same kind of fan base, but which fans will turn up to. How about Baywatch? Done.
That is exactly, I think, how it went. Because they couldn't replace it with new property, which had no following.
No,
because
it's their fault.
Oh, okay. Alright.
So that is us checking it out. Before we move on to our countdown today, just want to send a big, huge shout out to Podden Family. Hashtag Podden Family on Twitter, where a group of like-minded podcasts have come together to help one another grow and expand. It's a movement, it's a family, as the name implies. It is not a network.
They're
as
awesome.
Such.
Yes, yeah, good, great network.
There's lot of great podcasts in there, and I've got a couple of them here now to spin their promos. The Mike Jollett Show, and of course, our old pals, favourites, and all-around great guys, the Epic Film Guys. Check it out.
Hey, everyone. I am Mike Jollett from The Mike Jollett Show, available on Spreaker.com and iTunes soon, I hope. I do a show where I mention some news items, celebrity stuff, stupid criminals, and just silly things I read on the interweb. Proud member of the Podden Family.
News on the mark!
The year 2014. Two best friends set out on a journey to produce the best content related to all things film. In 2015, they founded a podcast to share their passions with the world. From rants, lisps, and beer to trailers, challenges, and premieres, Nick and Justin have you covered. Find the Epic Film Guys podcast at epicfilmguys.podbean.com and follow the show on Twitter. And we'll see you at the movies.
Our countdown for today, as has been mentioned, our top 10 last year, the sixth volume of this particular countdown, one in which we can talk about a lot of the films we have been watching that don't make the cut in other lists. Well, I'll start today, Wayne, unless you...
Yeah, I'll go hit it, man, hit it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here we go. So, my 10th worst, well, 10th film that I watched, the worst film I watched of late, is a film directed by Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, really?
And I have to say, if there's ever a case for a one man who's talented in one medium and not talented in another, it's him.
What's this movie?
It's a sequel to his big hit, Ted.
Oh, Ted 2.
It's Ted Fuck You 2.
This sucks, because I didn't mind the first Ted.
The first Ted wasn't bad. That would be the exception. As far as I'm aware, Seth MacFarlane's made three films.
Mm-hmm.
Ted, Ted 2, and Once Upon a Time in the West. Once Upon a Time in the West is abysmal.
Yeah, it's not good.
Ted 2 is crap.
Why?
It takes everything that was funny about the first film and proves, without a doubt, lightning only strikes once.
So, just...
Everything that was funny 4 years ago, or whatever it was, is not funny here.
Is it just a continuation of the story?
It's a continuation of the story with everything dialed up just a bit. A bit too much, in my opinion. Mark Wahlberg is a bit too blue-collar. Ted is a bit too crass. They smoke just a bit too many drugs. The chickenette is just a bit not hot enough. Amanda Seyfried?
Oh, yeah. So she's not... what's her name? Mila...
She saw the writing... Mila Kunis?
Mila Kunis.
She saw the writing on the wall, clearly, and got the fuck out of town.
Wow.
Complete and utter garbage. I laughed about twice during this movie.
So I haven't seen this. It was on my potentially I might see it list. You're suggesting I take it off?
Oh, I think you should watch it because... So my girlfriend kind of liked it. She's like, oh, it's kind of a stoner movie, but we're not stoned. And of course we're not because we are...
I'll take care of that right now.
Natural... pillars of society. No, she appreciated it on that level, but agreed you'd need to be under the influence to get anything out of the film.
I see. Okay. I'm undecided. I may still see it. But knowing that you think it sucks, maybe I'll like it more.
Oh, fuck, it was terrible.
Okay. Alright. Well, my number 10 is a movie that I had seen snippets of over the years, but finally thought, oh, what the hell, I'll just give it a full watch. It is Bangkok Dangerous. And I still have trouble, like, that there's a movie called this. It's a Nicolas Cage movie, and I don't know exactly what he's doing, like, on this level. Like, I don't even know why he makes these movies. Clearly, it's, yeah, money, but he has to go to, like, I think it's shot in the Philippines or Indonesia or something like that. And
sure, it wasn't shot in Bangkok?
I don't know if it was, to be honest with you. I'm not sure why. He plays a hitman who basically moves to Bangkok. He has to take out this guy. It's almost not worth going through the plot because it's fucking stupid and it's boring. It actually makes me mad. But his hair... is the real star here. I can't believe anyone, any makeup designer, or he himself, even his agent, would go, it's okay for you to do this with your hair.
So what is it? What is going on with the hair?
It's like a bird's nest, but the bird nest is cascading over a head and just jaggedly ending. It looks as though he has like a stormtrooper helmet on. It's really weird, man. But the worst thing is, it is just a stupid movie where he shoots people, not in a clever way, not in any interesting sort of way. He's doing a lot of running. And then at the end, I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but it's the dumbest, stupidest ending ever to complete a shitty, shitty movie.
All right, so it leaves you with a particularly shit taste in your mouth.
Yes, and the whole time you were eating shit. So, you know, this is...
So I shouldn't be a surprise.
No, then. No, but...
What is that nutty aftertaste?
I had trouble getting through the movie. How's that? And that's just... forget about it. So, Bangkok Dangerous is very dangerous. Don't bang your cock on it. Okay.
We need to make a new rule.
We're not doing that anymore.
For our podcast. You are not allowed to make a shit pun about the title of a film.
Well, okay, but I don't know what I'm going to talk about.
So Wayne will sit there mute while I talk into the microphone.
Yes, yes. On that note, why don't we tell me about your number 9?
My number 9 is a... Well, look, I had a moment of utter horror, to be honest, about Thursday of this last week. So we've been a good 27 days into the new year, and I realised I had not watched one single horror movie this year.
Good God.
And I panicked because we had the show coming on, and it's my job to put in there one independent little horror release, which is hopefully decent.
That's what you see your job here is?
Well, you know, I fucked up. Because I chose to watch a film called Stung. Directed by Betty Dears or something like that.
That's ironic.
First time director who doesn't give a shit. Yeah, this is a film which looks great in terms of its trailer and on paper.
Oh, tell me about the trailer.
A throwback to a sort of 80s creature feature, a 50s mutant creature, bigger stuff than they should be. So
in this case, so far. Go on, yeah.
We're talking about wasps.
Oh my God, you thought this sounded good?
Well, that's alright.
Alright, keep going.
So this slacker looking dude and his semi kind of hot in some shots and hot not hot in other shots boss are catering this exclusive party which is supposed to be out in the American wilderness somewhere, but it actually turns out, well, from what I can tell, it looks very much like the European wilderness because I think this was a European production. The party's run by some very eccentric people whose dead father was a pharmaceutical company person.
Okay.
Yeah, and clearly, you know, straight away, well, that's going to play into things here, and of course it does. Nothing about this film is decent, except there are a couple of good gore gags pretty early on. These wasps, right, they erupt out of the ground, they're way bigger than normal wasps, they sting people, and then based on whether or not it services the plot, people hatch human-sized wasps from them, like they literally burst out of their bodies. In seconds, if they're a minor character you don't give a shit about, but if they're a major character and something's supposed to happen with them, it takes hours. It's just one of the many ridiculous inconsistencies with this terrible, terrible script.
Mm-hmm.
It does star Clifton Collin Jr. as a Quasimodo, kind of the bad guy, really, of the piece. He's a character actor you'd recognise if you saw him. And Lance Henriksen is playing a little bit against type in his older age.
So there's a star in here.
There's some people in it, right? Lance Henriksen is the only good thing other than the gore about this film.
All right.
He actually owns his part quite well. It's meant to be a comedy. It's meant to be a horror comedy. There is nothing funny about this film. I laughed once.
That's a problem.
I laughed once, and this is the line I laughed at. That young man has balls of steel. To be a man, you have to be a man.
That's it? Holy shit.
That's a line of dialogue in a fucking movie. To be a man, you have to be a man.
Yeah, that's very insightful. Oh, I mean, that's hell. Like some Confucius shit.
Anyway, if you can forgive him that line, because he didn't obviously have to write it, he delivered it. His character is good fun, and the moment his character dies, spoiler, because none of you are fucking watching this piece of shit, the film should just end there, because I don't give a fuck about anybody else.
Does it end there?
Sadly, no.
You're
shaking your head like,
you bring this on yourself, my friend. Okay, my number 9 is Hitman Agent 47.
Okay, I spoke a little bit about this a couple of weeks back when we had the Something Pod on and talked our best and worst. This was one of my worst films. Had I included it, this would be my number 10.
Yeah.
This is the worst film I've seen this year.
Is it?
So Bangkok Dangerous must be fucking awful.
Dude, you have no idea. And this Hitman Agent 47, look, I had no faith in the movie, all right? Don't get me wrong, I wasn't going in there expecting anything. I knew it'd be a piece of shit. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to have fun with the action scenes. And to be fair, they weren't horrible action scenes. Like, they were past muster. But and it was still way better than the first one. But
I forgot the first one, so
the first one was actually anger. Like, it was so bad that you got pissed off.
I thought these action scenes were really badly constructed.
Did you?
Yeah, the first one was okay, but unearned. Like, who gives a shit? Oh my god.
Oh no, I didn't give a fuck about anything in this fucking movie. There's no question about that. I'm just talking about pure, like, this is a first time director anyway, so who did this?
Yeah, it was
so
the first time director, but it's the same fucking idiot that wrote the first one, Skip Woods.
Yeah, who knows how he got that?
This is a man that anything he touches turns to shit. If you say Skip Woods on a fucking credit, just don't go there.
See, I think Yeah, like, it's just shot in, like, Singapore and stuff like that. So there's some nice scenery and shit like that. But it's absolutely nothing here that anyone should check out. So, obviously, I hate this one. Hitman Agent 47.
What is your out of 5? Your 5-star rating?
It's a 1.
1. Yeah, exactly what I gave it. 1 star.
Yep.
All right. My number 8 is a film I actually caught at the movies at the Rooftop Cinemas here in Perth.
Very
which
nice.
Is a nice little arrangement where basically on the top of a, not a huge building, 8-story building or so, they put a cinema up there and you can go up and have a few beers and eat some pizza and sit down in bean bags. It's a really nice spot in, maybe not the day we went where it was stinking hot that night, but otherwise a good spot to catch a flick. Sadly, the best thing about said movie was the surroundings, because the night before is shit.
I didn't think it was that bad. I saw this also at the movie film cinema, and it's on my list.
Okay, I'm gonna do it.
So we'll just talk about it now.
Alright, yeah, alright. So you obviously liked it more than I do, because it's not your number 8.
No, it's not my number 8. Having said that, the amount of shit movies you watch, this is low, man. Oh, wait, look, this movie wasn't...
Fuck you.
No.
You dick.
No, I always like to get a little fucking jab in with all that. See, this movie wasn't as funny as his usual stuff.
Wasn't
and I liked...
as funny. It wasn't funny.
You no, it was funny. There were funny there. Bits in it. I'm
Where?
Saying.
What was a funny bit?
Let me see here. You put me on the spot. I don't know. Like the...
Exactly.
Okay, look. I thought the Kanye West song thing they did with the stepping piano key, that shit was pretty funny. No? Fuck you. You don't like that. Actually, neither do I. what else? Seth Rogen in the car getting fucked up. That was funny.
That was a one-note joke that went through the whole fucking film. That was its problem.
I was fine with it. Maybe I identifying too heavily.
Oh my god, I'm so...
No, it didn't... I maintain that did not get tedious. It was a feature of what was going on there with that character, but it was still amusing enough to say, like, this stupid motherfucker. Like, he keeps on taking drugs. It makes him... It's like, what the fuck? I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad, man.
The
Look,
only funny bit that I can recall was when he met the Indian, not sure, Pakistani woman.
Yeah, Mindy Kaling.
Yes, where's she from? She's from Mindy.
A show, Mindy something.
Yeah. They managed to switch phones, and so he's getting cock pics and texts from someone who clearly wants to sleep with her, and then we won't spoil it what that reveal is.
But that was a great scene.
That was an overly funny bit.
It wasn't that overly
funny. But it was mitigated
bit.
By the fact that you had, what the fuck is her name, Miley Cyrus, at the same time, like, fuck off Miley Cyrus.
I had no problem with Miley being in this. She was playing against herself. She was actually giving herself a little bit of shit. I thought that was good. Nah, this is it's not wonderful. I ain't gonna taste the shit, but it wasn't as bad as Paul Singh. If you're like, the only problem I had with this movie is that the comedy sort of dropped off towards the end. All right, but it was okay for a good time.
The first place, that would
be ballsack.
The characters aren't likable. None of them are engaging. Yeah, I didn't give a fuck about any of them, including
Seth
Joseph Rogen's Gordon.
Likeable.
Joseph Gordon.
Joggle Levin?
His whole fucking arc is terrible.
He's not especially likable, no.
But and who's the other dude? He's
Falcon?
Falcon.
I'm sure he has a name. So, yeah.
I'm not going to edit this.
Okay, yes, good.
Because that just shows us how little I care about him. Anthony Mackie.
That's it. Good.
Okay. I didn't look that up, by the way.
Yeah, very nice. This high on my list. Paul, you know, much harder Taskmaster. And did you feel that the venue that you saw it in
helped? Yeah, because this was be number 10 otherwise.
Oh, kiss my ass.
No,
right.
someone said to me, look, of course you didn't like it, you saw it after Christmas. You have to watch these films before Christmas to get into the spirit.
Okay.
As if it's a seasonal kind of proposition.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it helps a little.
Maybe that explains a bit, but otherwise, yeah, my number 8, The Night Before.
Well, my number 8 is a very unusual movie, and I'm not really sure how I got to watch it. It was a whim. I was, you know, I was flicking around, and it was on. It's called American Hero.
Never heard of it.
Neither had I. And the only reason I went into it was because I went into it with no knowledge of what it was, other than I had heard it was a different take on a superhero movie.
Okay.
Now, what it actually is Stephen Dorff is in this movie, and also...
I could go one way or the other.
Usually goes one way. Okay. No one sinks a movie like fucking Stephen Dorff.
Jai Courtney.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's a good point. But... And what it is, it's got Eddie Griffin in it as well. Do you know him? Undercover Brother?
Yes. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay. It's shot in an indie style.
I have seen this trailer.
Yeah?
You just clicked, yeah.
Yeah, and it's about this guy who lives in, like, New Orleans, Big Easy, whatever. And it's slower socioeconomic kind of area. He has powers. You don't really see them for a good chunk of the movie. So you're almost wondering, it's almost incidental when it happens, when he can actually basically telepathically move shit. Including stopping bullets.
Okay.
To be fair, it is shot in a way that it's sort of conversational that it happens. There's a little bit of special effects here and there. But the movie is... If it had anything solid to offer, then it would actually have been something. But what you're getting is that it's like a movie that was shot almost completely in montage. It jump cuts from scene to scene. Not confusingly so, but in a way that you don't care. So it's like really, really cerebral. Then it's all loud and energetic, which would be fine if there was any point to it.
Sounds like a shit version of Chronicle.
It is. It is, but it's not even trying to do that. What it's trying to do is... I mean, Stephen Dorff is somewhat interesting as a character, but the movie essentially amounts to nothing. It puts things up there and then doesn't knock them over. For example, there's an element or a beat in the movie where it's seen that him using his powers actually is detrimental to his health. Then go on to do nothing with that.
Oh, right.
So it's just nothing.
Abandoned.
Yeah, like, then the next scene, you're using the fuck out of him with no kind of consequence. And it makes no sense.
Yep.
And then it just fucking ends. So, this is not good. This is not a good movie.
Really not. It's number 8 in your list.
Yeah, it's a piece of shit. Don't go see it, everyone. I know some people might like the indiness of it and that sort of shit.
Mm.
I didn't really care for it, or it wasn't justified, so forget it.
Look, we should probably add that what we normally do on these top 10 and last 10 is let you know when we cross the divide from something that is good... Sorry, so something that's bad to when it is good. So...
Yeah.
We're clearly not there for you. We're certainly not there for me, even with my number 7.
Oh, really?
My number 7 was a ex-co-host, or will be a co-host on the show, Alejandro,
mm-hmm.
when he knew we were doing our top 10 westerns. He said, you should check this movie out. Slow West.
Wait, you didn't like this? This is on my list too.
Okay, good. Well, you're going to defend another film, which I thought...
No, I'm not saying it's a shit, but I want to hear what you heard about it.
Shit was too strong a word. This is a 2-star film for me. It did not pass. It did not make the grade. And
why?
I'll tell you why. Because it was boring as fuck.
Look, I'm the first guy to tell you that boring as fuck is... I don't agree with it. Like, I didn't find it boring. It's slow moving, for sure. It's a slow burn, as it were. But it was played very well. I actually wasn't bored, completely all the way through it. I thought the performances actually carried it all the way through.
Whereas, okay, so this film is basically about, what's his name, Cody McPhee-Smith, or Smith McPhee or something. He's playing this young guy from Scotland who's come to the Wild West in America to track down the love of his life.
Right, who he hasn't nailed.
No, as the film unfolds, they do flashbacks and they show you the nature of their relationship, but it's probably not what you think. We shouldn't say anything more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
The film's directed by John McLean, not John McClane, very close, and I think it's his first film, and it's got Michael Fassbender in it as this bounty hunter type dude, or this gunslinger dude who befriends... No, he doesn't befriend the kid. He sees a marker he can make money off.
Mm-hmm.
He takes the kid's money and says, I'll protect you here in the West while you track down your love.
Yep.
The film only works if you buy the way his character warms to the kid, right?
And you clearly did not.
I did not for 1 second think this was believable at all. I didn't like the kid. I hated Michael Fassbender's character even more. Then it proceeds to be this sort of Wild West Road movie where kid and or Michael Fassbender's character meet a bunch of quirky characters and interact with them as they continue towards their goal of meeting this girl. The only bit of the film that works for me is Ben Mendelsohn as the bad guy, as the villain of the piece, and the final shootout, which takes place over the last 15 minutes of the film.
I disagree completely. I'll tell you why. First of all, I do buy the way that he actually warms to the kid, and here's why. It's because it's not as though all of a sudden the light goes off in his head, and he's like, actually, I like this kid now. What happens is, he meets people during the way, and the kid interacts with that person, turns out this person, you know, and there's, like, acquaintances of his that turn up. And you, I can see the progression for him going... you know what, I think actually I might... He's seeing basically that his life is this, and it doesn't have that much meaning, and perhaps by doing something good, he may become a different man, a better man.
Oh my god, you're boring me almost as much
as
Oh,
kiss
film.
My ass! This is how it works! That's the... Well, as it goes... Look, I'm not saying it's like the best movie or anything. In fact, on my list, it's not far from now. But... it's played well enough. It's a bit of a weird moment at the end, and I'm like, what the fuck was the point of that? There's a little bit of stuff going on with the shootout, but I did not have any problems with this movie. I actually think it's one of the better ones. So, okay, I'm surprised you, Mr. Yeah. Fucking
Patient Bad Call,
movies.
Ali, bad call.
Nah, and fine
look,
call,
we
Ali.
We saw last week, for the last episode, if you haven't checked it out, check it out. The Hateful Eight we reviewed, that went for 167 minutes. This went for about 87.
Mercifully short.
Oh, this film felt longer to me than The Hateful
Eight. Nah, fuck off. It wasn't that bad.
There you go.
So that's my take on it. Whatever. Okay, well, I'm going to take it back a little here in for my number 7.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think you're a fan of this show, but I'm a big fan of this TV show. It's Sherlock.
Oh, I don't mind the show at all.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sherlock, because of everyone's massive schedule, like Benedict Cumberbatch and what's it, Martin Freeman, all that,
yep.
They're doing all different things. There's not going to be another series of this show for another, like, 2 years or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So they went ahead and did a TV movie, which they called Sherlock, The Abominable Bride.
But it is different to the TV show.
It is different to the TV show, or it's... Well, I can't... This is really weird. I can't say a lot about this without spoiling anything for you.
Oh, don't.
But I can tell you...
Yeah,
no, I can tell you that basically the setting of it is back in, Victorian,
yeah,
Elizabethan.
Whereas
England.
It's contemporary, the TV show. So that's
right.
That's the big difference.
Right. Oh, man. See, I can't actually tell you something.
You obviously
but
know more about it than I do.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. So if you see... But that's the way you're meant to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So if when you see this show, you will see that there is some relevance. And I'm not saying anything more than that. It's not overall up to par with the TV show, I think.
Okay.
I think that... Yeah,
so they released this in cinemas like a week, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a special like release kind of thing with like people there to do a Q&A and stuff. It's still worth a look if you're a fan of the show, and it is important. But by the way, if you can hear any like planes or beating and stuff, we're getting a little storm situation going on here. So,
summer storm here in Perth.
Yeah. Look, I think that this is actually just on the cusp of me starting to like the movies that I saw. I didn't mind it, but it wasn't up to the normal quality. So yeah, it was okay.
So, is this 2.5?
It is 2.5.
All right, at your number 7. Sadly, my number 6 is still in 2-star territory.
Mm.
And it is a film I think you touched on in one of our top 10 last 10s in the past. So I won't say too much about it. It's Tomorrowland, directed by Brad Bird, starring George Clooney.
This should be interesting.
Yeah, now, overall, it was a disappointment. But because you and a lot of other people had prepared me for said disappointment, it didn't offend me the way that it would have had I gone in and seen this film early before I'd been... My expectations have been lowered.
Yeah, because of the bloody marketing they did for the show.
Yeah. Look, the idea is sound. The execution is massively flawed.
Do you know, I think... Yeah, tell me. Well, tell me
so
why.
So, the film is basically about this... You know, it's based on a Disney ride, as far as I understand it. So, Tomorrowland is this place that exists kind of simultaneously to our world, but you can only get there in special kinds of ways. And George Clooney, in the opening montage, goes there as a kid, and then we flash forward into the future in this... strong-headed, very intelligent young woman gets targeted by the people of, or an agent of Tomorrowland to be able to cross over there and blah, 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 blah. Some of the scenes are pretty cool, especially the first scene when she goes there properly. And there's this great, I mean, it's a digitally enhanced shot, but one shot of her wandering through the land, and that's amazing.
No, it looks beautiful. It's a beautiful looking movie.
And there's an excellent scene when she and George Clooney meet when they're being attacked by agents of Tomorrowland in his house and he's home aloneing his defense effectively.
Yep.
That's a great scene as well. But overall, this film just, you just don't give a fuck.
What the reason I think that you don't give a fuck, I said this last time when I was reviewing it, is that it's tonally, it doesn't tell you what you're supposed to take from this show. Now, I know that's supposedly different to everyone, but when you don't define a movie well enough, as in, like I said, like last time, you know, if I, at the end of it, I didn't know whether I should feel ashamed, happy, elated, what, this, that. It just didn't have enough. It seemed like it was low on substance, even though it was a really, like, it had. Yeah. If you looked at it on paper, you'd go, yeah, I get it. But a lot of people didn't like this movie because you couldn't put it into anything. You're not, you couldn't hang a tone on it and say it's this kind of movie.
It's not a kid's film. It's not an adventure film. It's whatever. Look, the problem is the script.
And yeah, the problem is the script. Absolutely.
Both by Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof, who is fast becoming, Lindelof, I think, for our podcast, the antithesis of what you want.
Yep, I know you like Lost and that, but it was a fucking mess towards the end, I gotta say.
This film goes to great pains to keep you in the dark as to what's happening to the last, like, 20 minutes of the movie. And it doesn't work for a two and a bit hour film.
Yeah, it's so long
it needs to display what's going on and give it some pathos and some credence way earlier in the piece.
Yep.
And I don't understand how such a huge, massively budgeted Disney film could have got to where it has.
I know.
Without somebody pointing that out.
This is Bob Zemeckis, isn't it? Like some, you know, young kid.
Brad Bird, you
mean. Brad Bird, I'm sorry. Yeah. Brad Bird, yeah, out of... Yeah, forget about it. So, I mean, it should have worked.
Yeah, so a big disappointment. Two massive mehs. Is what I gave this film. 2 stars.
Okay, 2 stars. My number 6 is Slow West.
Okay.
So back to you, my friend.
It wasn't that much higher. You defended it. So what did you give it? 2.5?
Two and a half.
So
No, this is about 3.
You gave 3 stars.
By the way, my brain doesn't work like yours. My number 6 can be 3, and my number 5 can be 2.5.
No.
Yes! And I'll tell you why. It's because maybe the movie, standalone, is not academically as good as some of the other ones, but I liked it more. So, yeah, in my head...
Why don't you give it a higher grade?
Because I think that I'm a little bit weird and I'm allowing for it.
Your hand off your cock.
Nah, well, look, it's always there. Hey, look, I'm saying... Yeah, I'm complicated, motherfucker. That's how it is.
That's complicated is like a euphemism for fucked in the head,
right?
Oh,
yeah, I know. We've used it many times.
Anyway, okay, fine. My number 5.
Hmm.
It's also a film I think you've reviewed on the podcast, so again, I won't say too much about it. It is Ant-Man.
Ah! What did one think of Ant-Man?
I didn't. This is where I crossed the line. I've moved now.
Good, because it's a good movie.
I didn't like to films I didn't mind. I liked, I'd give it a pass. Maybe 3 stars. This is a 2.5, 3-star film. Look, a little note about grading here. I think we on the Countdown grade a little harder than a lot of other podcasts.
No, like, you do, motherfucker.
Go on. I think you do too. It's like, number 5. Maybe I'm hardest. Yes. That's fair to say. 3 stars for me is a likable film. Other people would give it 3 stars as a kind of, it didn't meet my mark.
Is 2.5 likable for you?
2.5's right on that borderline.
See, that makes no sense to me.
Anyway.
Hey, go on.
3.5, very good film. 4 stars for me.
Outstanding.
Wonderful film.
Yep.
4.5, incredible. 5, reserved for about 7 films I've ever seen.
Good God, you're a shit teacher. You'd be such a hard bastard. Everyone would be like, oh, don't go to Mr. Professor Paul's class. So go on.
So yeah, when I give a film 3 stars... That's a recommendation. That's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And Ant-Man's the 3-star film. It's not great. It's not wonderful. It's not brilliant. It's serviceable, and it does what it sets out to do okay. There's nothing about this film that would ever make me go back and watch it again, however.
Taking it in like context, though, for a superhero movie, I guess why I liked it more a bit is that it's... Remember we were talking about the trailer for this when it came out, and I was like, this looks like fucking shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to take something the size of an ant and make me care about it? You know, and then...
But you care about your car.
Oh, God, I was waiting for it. We have made a lot of dick jokes this way.
Sorry, moving on.
More importantly, I care about your car. I don't know what we're doing. All right. So, but then when the movie comes out, we're still talking about dicks, man. The comp dick. Movie and dick. Back on topic. Like, with the Michael Douglas thing, at the beginning, there's some CGI, he's young, that's cool.
Yeah, that did look good.
And they went a whole different way. They said, they even mentioned the Avengers, and they can't call the Avengers, man. So they're doing their own thing. They're acknowledging that. Because really, in the superhero world, if you're a police commissioner, you just call fucking Superman for everything. Right? It's like, well, you can do it.
That's DC, not MCU.
Yeah, but same shit, different bucket. You just go to, I don't know, whatever.
Thor.
Thor, yeah. I don't know, whoever, yeah. So, in that way, it still kept you within that world, and that's why I liked it. It made me care. about the small my dick size character.
Look, I understand where you're coming from. I think it was treaded new ground in terms of saying, this is a heist movie, that's kind of not bad. That said, all support characters I didn't really get on board with and didn't like their particular roles too much.
I like it.
Michael Pena included, or Pena?
Pena, he's great.
Anyway.
I think he killed in that movie, really?
Mm. Okay. He was a comic relief.
And he fucking nailed the shit out of it. Okay, that's me.
What I didn't like was the bad guy. Again, Marvel screws up a bad guy arc and just, who gives a shit about Corey Stoll and his wasp, whatever the fuck he was.
It was
Michael Douglas was good. Probably the best thing about it. Gets to get his little, sort of menacing, crazy eyes on a couple of times.
Agreed.
Paul Rudd wasn't badly cast either. I thought that.
No, I think he did great. Yeah. I think he did great. Yeah.
So overall, look, a fine, finely entertaining film, but not one I ever need to see again. 3 stars for Ant-Man.
All right, fair enough. I'm going to. Well, my number 5 is The Night Before, son. So, we are back to you.
So that's a fair bit higher than when I had it at number 8.
Yeah, totally.
So my number 4 is a little independent drama, really, called Cop Car, starring Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. And the film is very simply about 2 10, 11-year-old boys who are running away from home. Although, one of the positives of this film is it does not spell much out for you at all. It leaves you to join the dots.
Right.
So they never actually say, hey, we're running away from home, fuck our parents, and stuff like that. But you get that from their dialogue.
Okay, that's fine. That's good, actually.
They come across an abandoned cop car in the middle of fucking nowhere, and they, basically being 11-year-old boys, jump in and start to try to drive the car, and they drive off. And then the film flashes back to Kevin Bacon,
who is
a corrupt sheriff,
right?
Who gets out of his car. He's got 2 bodies in the boot. He's burying one when these kids stumble across his car and drive off.
Oh, shit.
So now he's got to get the car back without letting anyone else in this sort of very small, bumfuck Idaho kind of town
know
that he's a bad guy who's killed what turns out to be drug dealers and is wanting to take their stash for himself.
Ah!
So it plays out from there. It's a very short film. It's very economically shot with some nice vista kind of shots.
Okay.
Very simple, but does the job. And even though I'd still say this is 3, getting up towards 3.5 stars, it's nothing mind-blowing. But given my expectations are so low, I was quietly impressed.
All right. No, that's actually kind of interesting. Okay. Was it again?
Cop Car.
Cop Car. Speaking of indie, my number 4 came off a recommendation from you on this very show.
Hey.
I saw a documentary called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau.
All right. So this is better than the Island of Dr. Moreau, clearly.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard about this documentary.
Oh, man. It is nuts. I hope people out there have seen The Island of Dr. Moreau purely for reference. It is often touted as the worst movie of all time, which is
tough. It's up there. Yep.
And I even remember when we saw it when we were kids, we were expecting so much. And we were like, man, this thing starts shit and gets worse.
Oh, the opening credit sequence is good.
Yes, you said the opening credits was cool and that's it. So that's got like almost fuck all to do with the director. But this documentary chronicles how everything came about and why everything turned to shit. And it's really honest. Now, the director, Richard Stanley, who is someone who...
Well, it was the original director. And then eventually his name gets taken off the credits for John Frankenheimer.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when it started, it all started with his idea. He said, this is my reimagining of the original movie, The Island of Dr. Moreau. And he had done Hardware before, so the studio's given him a
chance. A film called Dust Devil as well, which I didn't like as much, but Hardware, good stuff.
Yeah, and basically what they do is that they go through how, just the problems he's had. They fly to Cairns, and that's where they shot the movie.
All right, yep.
In Australia, and they get Marlon Brando to star. And
which
like,
is
holy
kind
shit.
Of amazing.
Huge,
even
right?
He's pretty much a fat blob at this point.
Oh, it's God, you'd have no idea. And then they've managed to sign Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
And
when he was hot,
he was coming right off Batman Forever
career and looks wise.
Yes, he was coming off that, so he had the biggest like chip on his shoulder because he was Batman.
Oh, okay.
And he came in, and James Woods was going to be in this role, playing the David Toulis role.
Oh yeah,
fucking Val Kilmer said, "I don't like this guy." Boom, nailed him. He's off the
James
production.
Woods.
James Woods, dudes. Fuck. I know. So it's like holy shit. And then first of all, he gets on the island, and there's just problems from start to finish. There's like all sorts of extras. Everyone's in makeup, comic, whatever, this, that. Marlon Brando just doesn't even turn up. Now, he does have a sort of excuse. His
Literally.
Daughter committed suicide around that time.
Jesus, okay.
So he's like, oh, shit, well, what are they going to do? But they're already all set up, and they've been set up for weeks and months and everything. And it's like Australian cast members talking about what they had to do and shit like that. And it devolves into such a problem where finally when Marlon Brando turns up, he's like, you know what? I'm going to put myself in white face paint or white from Bitter Hitters. That's why he's in there like that. Because he wanted his extras to shoot, or his stand-in, to shoot most of the scenes.
Oh, fuck.
And he then goes on to change everything. He goes on and says stuff like, he's trying to rewrite the movie. He doesn't care about anything. He's like, I'm just here to get paid.
He's like bloody Bruce Willis on... Yeah. On
Cop Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even worse so, because he actually doesn't care. Yeah, he actually goes in and goes, I don't give a fuck, I'm not turning up on set today. And shit like this. And it goes so badly that Richard Stanley. Yeah, he's actually going, like, he said, the cast members are interviewed, and they're saying, like, he's walking around saying, oh, I've got to be seen to be shooting something every day. This, that, you know, he's really, really messed up. And it gets so bad that when they finally turf him from the production, he leaves and disappears. And no one hears from him for fucking months.
Do they get Richard Stanley on the
he's front and center. He talks all about it.
All right, I need to watch this movie.
Yeah, and well, just a little thing here. When he disappears, he actually stays in Cairns. He doesn't fly back home, and he lives among the bush.
People. Wow.
It's weird, man. He lives among the Aboriginals and stuff. It's really weird.
Shit.
And yeah, you gotta see it, because it is absolutely...
Sounds great. I'm really intrigued.
It is very, very interesting to see how horrible the whole... And they even talk to the producers as well, who are like hearing all these reports back in the States from, like, what the fuck is this?
Yep.
So just give it a try. It's really, really interesting. Don't learn any more about it. Just...
All right, great. Well, that sounds genuinely intriguing. Thank you. My number three is a film which was widely panned, and I guess maybe my expectations had been subsequently very, very lowered. So I was pleasantly surprised. I put this film on doing something else and completely and utterly not giving a shit about it, thinking it'll be pants.
Yeah.
It's Selfless, directed by Tarsin Singh.
You like this?
I did. I mean, I didn't love it. We're still at 3 stars for me, by the way.
What number is this?
3.
This is okay.
Yeah, it's high, but it's high on a very poor, on a pretty average list this week. There's not a lot that I can defend. I guess I've made some bad choices with my January 2016 viewing.
I am quite surprised about this.
But I'm backlogging through films I didn't get to, which I didn't think would make our top 10 for 2015, and I'm quite right.
Yeah.
With one exception, which is coming up. Selfless starts out as this kind of, I think, in a really intriguing way. It's a kind of meditation on the limitations of life and immortality and what it means when you die. And so you have Ben Kingsley playing this ultra-rich dude who has no quality connections in his life, arguably maybe with one friend.
Mm-hmm.
But he's estranged from his daughter. His daughter wants nothing to do with him. But he's got this boatload of money and he's dying of cancer.
Right.
And he gets approached by this scientist, Matthew Goetz.
Yep.
Is that his name? Yep. Who basically says, I can help you live forever by changing your consciousness into a much younger body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of... It's not even body swap, because it's not like the younger person's consciousness goes into his body, but he has a new lease on life, and now he's played by Ryan Reynolds.
By the way, the scientist maintains that these bodies I'm putting you into are organically grown in a lab.
So they've been grown in a lab, and they're not people. Of course, it turns out that's a massive lie, and Ryan Reynolds had a life, and it starts to intrude on his consciousness, and he decides to do something about it, because... And this is what I liked about the movie. There's an actual arc for this character, for Ben Kingsley, initially's character.
But did you not see the ending a mile away? Yeah.
Look, it's completely and utterly predictable. There's no surprises. Everything is beat for beat how you'd expect it to go, but with some surprisingly well-shot
action sequences. Well. It's shot well.
It looks
nice.
It's not overblown like Tarsin Singh's normal films are, like The Cell and Immortals. It's very straightforward, but I liked it. I thought it was very satisfying. It would have been a great film had they taken a chance on the ending, but you knew how it was going to end, and it ends that way.
And that was probably what I struggled with halfway through. I was sitting there going, if it's just going to go like this, then, I don't know, it's sort of...
But at that point, I was happy to see how he would win.
Yeah, I guess so.
If I can put it that way.
I guess so. No, it wasn't unsatisfying necessarily, but no one went to see this movie. It tanked.
And people saying Ryan Reynolds phoned it in.
No, his performance was fine.
It was fine. I think everyone was fine.
It was written that way, yeah. And that's how
Matthew Goetz was particularly kind of bland, and that's exactly what he needed to be in his role. So I like this movie. I would give it a cautious recommendation to people who are open to seeing something that most people don't like.
I am surprised. Okay. My number three is Bridge of Spies.
Ooh, okay.
Been tricking out.
It's on my watch list.
I'm not saying this massively strongly. I did like it, obviously. It's a Spielberg, so it looks beautiful, and it's done beautifully, and you're into it. I know you have an issue with Spielberg's family-focused type things. It is definitely that, but not that much.
I think he's been massively neutered in his latter years as a filmmaker, but he still makes good films.
No, he does, and this is undoubtedly a really good film. It's a tad long, but it's...
like every fucking film released today? And I'm not having got you to say that. No. I legitimately believe it.
It is, but like because Tom Hanks is such... He's such a veteran. Like, he just, it's still very engaging. He basically goes to Russia, and you probably know the story, basically.
Yeah, it's a trade of spies, right?
Trade of spies, he's told to broker. And because it's set in the 50s or whenever it is, like, you know, it's such, you know, a lot of problems for him defending a convicted spy.
Yep.
And I think what was really, I guess what made me like the movie is that it just felt really good. It was actually, okay. It was, even though it was set in the snow and everything and this and that, it was really quite a satisfying, quite a little bit life-affirming type show.
Hmm.
So, you know.
So it's a feel-good movie, in, is what you're effectively saying?
Feel-good insofar, yeah, there's nothing like that you're going to wince at in this movie. Yeah, I guess it is feel-good, you would say that. But more than that, it's just a good drama.
Okay, and score?
Score is 3.5.
3.5, okay, so we're in pretty good territory.
Yeah,
here.
Yep. Yeah.
I also have 3.5 stars for my number 2 film, which is a very small independent film. It is my second horror on the list, and I did see this last year, but I haven't really had a chance to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe I mentioned it as a honorary mention on the best of the year.
Okay.
It is Deathgasm.
Yeah, I remember you speaking of this. Go.
Yeah, it's basically a horror metal film. I think some of these really old 80s films where there was hair bands
and whatever.
And mixed in with a horror film, and that's what you've got here. It's set in New Zealand, yes, and where an outcast comes to a small town, makes friends with this, I'm not sure what a New Zealand bogan is called, but a New Zealand goth at least.
Okay.
And they form their own band, and they manage to stumble across, through a series of weird occurrences, this song for this old metal band they used to both love, and they play it, and they basically resurrect demons, and demons start killing everyone and taking everyone in town. So it's very Evil Dead.
Yeah.
With a modern sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you loved metal, this film would be the absolute bomb.
Really?
This would be the best film you've ever seen, or at least the best film of the last few years. I'm not a huge metal fan. I appreciate a few of those kinds of songs. I'm more an alternative rock kind of guy. So it didn't quite hit me, but some of the jokes are legitimately funny. It's a horror comedy, and some of it actually hits.
This is high. What's your star rating?
Yeah, it's 3.5.
That's a good movie.
3.5 stars. It's not even bordering on 4. As I said before when I explained my rankings, that's an endorsement. If you are into horror films, if you're into gore, if you're into sort of metal, then you must see this movie.
All right.
And it's directed by Jason Leigh, L-E-I, Howden.
Okay, very nice. My number 2 is going to make a lot of people vomit.
Including me?
I'm going to guess, because here's a movie that I caught kind of off the cuff. I've always wanted to see it. It is a classic movie. Many people consider it the best movie of all time. It is Apocalypse Now, Redux.
Okay, so what's the Redux part?
The Redux is basically 50 fucking extra minutes.
Wait, why don't you just watch Apocalypse Now?
Because that was what was on TV. It just came on. I was like, oh, okay, I'll check this out. Now, the only reason it's number 2 and not number 1 is because of the Redux. It absolutely does not need that. I went back and looked at how, you know, it normally is. And the scenes that they added to it, it's for fans. It's not actually adding anything really to the movie. If you're one of the weird people like me who've never seen Apocalypse Now, go see the original. I don't recommend the Redux. Having said that, I can see the scale on which this movie was made back then, and it's well known that Coppola, you know, basically almost lost his mind and budget and everything on this movie.
This is another Honor of Dr. Moreau, but it's one that worked out much better.
It is, and it's actually amazing that it worked out like that, because I mean, basically, the movie is about kind of a journey into madness, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's very episodic, which I didn't know was the case with this movie. Martin Sheen goes in there, and he's got the Robert Duvall scene, the Charlie Don't Surf, whatever. But then, as he's on the boat, it goes through different, almost, episodes. And it ends up with the big Marlon Brando thing. Marlon Brando apparently has always been an asshole like this, because from what I've read, he also he wasn't even supposed to be fat when he turned up on set. He was supposed to be skinny because the character he played with had been there for a long time.
Yeah, yep.
It infuriated the director, but he shot it anyway, and that's why he's all in black and in shadow for most of the movie.
Right.
It has very little to do with, like, just basically in sort of the last quarter of the movie-ish. Mm. I really, really appreciated it, and I didn't know if I would.
Okay.
So
I watched the original way back when. It's too long ago.
Did it have an effect on you?
I think I was probably too young. That's the thing.
I mean, it's hard to look at it again, necessarily, but it's still a wonderful movie.
Okay, nice pick.
Okay.
My number one is a film that would have made my top 10 for last year.
Is it?
Had I got around to seeing it, and it's a little sad, therefore I want to give it due recognition today. It is F. Gary Gray's Straight Outta Compton, the biopic of
Eazy-E,
N.W.A., including Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, and of course Ice Cube, amongst a few others.
This is your number one?
Yeah, this was a great movie. It's 2.5 hours long, or a little short of that, but it's engaging from frame one to the end.
Yeah?
Yep.
I haven't seen it, and I've been wanting to see it.
You must see this film, yeah, and talk about your next top 10 last.
Everyone talks about it as bomb.
Let's see if you have the reaction. Look, it would have been at least a 4-star film, maybe even 4.5.
Dear God.
Had it not clearly jumped over the more controversial parts of their life.
Okay.
So it's okay when the controversy is about them fighting against the cops, treating them like black people, because black people all commit crimes. That's the way the cops treat them. And there's a couple of really powerful scenes where they're just not doing anything. They're standing around talking, and they just get set upon by the cops.
Mm.
And their manager's played by Paul Giamatti. He's great.
Yeah.
As well. All of the young actors in this film, none of whom I recognise, and you mentioned one before, is going on to do...
24.
They're all excellent, including Ice Cube's son plays Ice Cube.
Yeah, I was wondering how that would go. Of course, he's getting props.
Arguably, he's the main character in the film.
Yeah.
He's excellent. The three main guys, as we just said, are all excellent. It's funny, you get a sense of someone like... I remember listening to Eazy-E a lot when I was...
I was just going to ask 9, you. 10, so you did. 9, you yeah. were into that. You were into that.
I was into Eazy-E, but I wasn't... NWA, I guess it was the same time, but for whatever reason, my exposure was to Eazy-E, and I knew about NWA, but I wasn't really into it. So, but to hear some of the songs, and they use the actual songs as a soundtrack
of course, for
a
lot of this movie,
it's great. And I went straight up... Got the album. Just to have it rock. When I'm not listening to podcasts, I just have that rocking in the background at the moment.
You?
Yeah.
Wow.
The whitest man alive.
Yes, you're so white. This is amazing.
But that's the thing. This is the band that brought rap to the world, not just
completely.
The West Coast or the East Coast and whatever. And they do detail the West Coast, East Coast, big back and forth. And
oh, yeah.
And, of course, Eazy-E. It's not a spoiler for real life. Come on. Eazy-E dies in real life, and they show that. But they do skip over some of the juicy bits where they're not painted in such the brightest of lights.
Mm.
So Dr. Dre knocking around, beating the shit out of this woman, and none of that's shown.
The
problem is, then, it's not a biographical film, it's an autobiographical film.
Yes, it becomes...
Because Ice Cube and Dr. Dre produced it.
Yeah, it becomes coloured.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So it lost marks for that for me. Had they just gone warts and all and shown everything, I would have just said, brilliant.
Yeah.
And it does kind of, it's weird, like, their rise is very fast, and their disintegration is very fast, and in between is well detailed. I know it's already 2.5 hours, and they had to cut it down somewhere, but it feels like they missed the important bits in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing too much. You must watch this film. It's an excellent movie.
As a guy who had some familiarity with their music yourself, I know of them, but never listened to their music.
Good enough. Watch the movie.
It's okay?
Yeah, it's a good biography. When you think about the majority of what we're being shown here, even if it's a sanitized version, even if it is skewed from their perspective, happened, or something equivalent happened, that lends it a lot of power.
All right. Well, I'm definitely...
They helped change a lot of, you know, we're thinking 30 years ago now, virtually.
Mm.
They helped change race relations.
Absolutely.
In a positive way.
Absolutely. No. Okay, good. I'm checking that out. Straight out of Compton. My number one is The Big Short.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's number one, and I love the shit out of this movie. Now, I should mention, I watched it with Bridget. Bridget pretty much walked out on it.
You still liked it.
I loved it. I was enthralled. I mean, you guys have definitely heard of this movie. Ryan Gosling and Brad Pitt and Steve Carell and a whole bunch of people in there. Massive cast. It's about the financial crisis, but the whole point about this is that they are trying to actually make you understand it.
Yeah, I've read a lot to say that it should be boring, but it's not. It's very relatable.
The devices they use in this to give you an interest in the movie, which clearly didn't work on Bridget, is that he breaks the fourth wall. He talks to Ryan Gosling is talking to you as the audience.
Yep. And we don't mind. We might be in the minority on that, but we don't.
I don't mind it at all.
As long as it works.
Exactly. It's got to work, and it's hard. But he'll say stuff like, and to explain, you know, subprime something mortgages, here's Margot Robbie in a bathtub. And they'll just cut to her.
I mean...
No, they'll just cut to her in a bathtub, talking and explaining about it. But in a good way. Like, in a condescending kind of a technical way. You are undeniably enthralled. Like, you're sitting there... Well, you're watching it, and you're listening. And then they'll cut to it. And it's full of scenes like that, where they just have people who are celebrities playing themselves, talking about shit. Like, Anthony Bourdain is a celebrity chef. And he talks about a concept and likens it to him, you know, buying fish for his mic. Stuff like that, you know. So it's that, and it's really... I don't know, I was just impressed with the execution. And I know I've got an interest in this stuff as it is.
Sure. But far from alone.
Yeah, I think that... But I think even, you know, any layperson would generally like this. So, yeah, The Big Short is excellent.
That is
my favorite show.
All right, nice pick. Look, I'm very much looking forward to seeing this, and that just puts the cherry on the cake.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you'll still like it after this, but, you know... Who knows?
Yeah, maybe expectations too high, but I will definitely be seeing it. There it is, Straight Outta Compton and The Big Short, our number one films for this top 10, last 10. It's been a hell of a show. We've got one list where loyal listener and friend to the show, Jared, has written in to let us know his top 10, last 10, and we're going to go backwards in terms of it. He's also punctuated with a few comments here and there. His number 10 was Goodnight Mummy, a film I spoke about a while ago on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, my hopes got up and it's supposed to be a great horror film, foreign horror film, but it was such an anticlimax and I felt I was lied to. Basically, the movie didn't go where I was expecting it, he says, and it felt like they made a mess of a promising premise. Couldn't agree more. Jared, spot on. Number 9, Spectre. He calls it the worst of the current generation Bond films. I think Quantum of Solace is probably worse.
I actually didn't mind that one, but I'm a weirdo. So go on.
I think it was trying too hard to tie all the other films together. Agreed. And they had Christoph Waltz, and he says, who was completely wasted.
Yep, no, we agree.
And he's 100% right there. Number 8, your fifth best film of last year, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Uh-huh.
He says, good, not great. Yeah. Definitely worth a watch, but didn't captivate me enough to really talk it up.
Yeah, this is a me thing. Sorry.
Clearly, he doesn't give a shit about fashion as much as you do. Number 7, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I didn't like it as much as Ghost Protocol, Jared says, but it was certainly a lot better than the latest James Bond installment.
Yeah, it's good, but not Ghost Protocol.
Deathgasm, I just spoke about as my number 2 film. He has it all the way down at number 6. He says, a fun, over-the-top New Zealand horror flick with a background in death metal. What's not to like? Number 5, Legend. I'm quickly becoming a Tom Hardy fanboy. He's so good, I'm willing to forgive the accent in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
In this movie, he plays both the Cray brothers.
I heard this movie was a piece of shit.
I haven't seen it, but I'm ready to watch it.
Yeah, okay. And I'm glad to hear there's a good review here, because I only heard bad ones. Go on.
Says he does it well, playing the identical twin gangsters. He's number 4, Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, yeah.
Great blend of genres with the Western horror element. And he said, I'm still cringing after watching that scene.
Yeah, that scene.
I won't spoil what he says there. His number 3 is a film we reviewed last week, The Hateful Eight.
Well, he says, I watched this through Tarantino-coloured glasses. The man can do no wrong in my book, so I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Yep, so slightly higher now, 3.5.
Yeah.
And he did agree it's probably a little bit too long, maybe in half an hour too long, but that's okay because it's Tarantino.
Number 2 is Straight Outta Compton, yep, which you just spoke about. He said he straight up loved it. The actors did so well. And you combine that with a massive nostalgia boner that he got from listening to classic NWA, much like yourself.
Yeah, so he was clearly a bigger fan, I think, of the old classic music. Yep. And his number 1
was The Revenant. He said it should be Best Picture for sure. The scene with the bear was intense, and Leo and Tom were both sensational. So, and it's beautiful. It's
spot on, and I 100% agree with that.
So do I.
Thank you, Jared, for your list. If you are a listener to the show and you'd like to get on any of our shows in terms of a list, please do write to us. You can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com if you want to, like Jared did, leave us with a sort of list and your
thoughts
and pieces on that list. If you want to just give us the list straight out, you can write to us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Just search for The Countdown Movie and TV. Yep. You'll find us.
You can also communicate with us on Twitter if you just want to say, hey, I'm interested in doing this, that, or whatever. We are at The Countdown PC. And you can check us both out in Letterboxd, where our lists for today's show will be. Wayne is Wayne Tang Clan. I am Kaiser Soze. We are now on Stitcher and Spreaker and on iTunes as well. We're also hosted on Podomatic, so check out us on any of those platforms and follow up some shows that way. Speaking of following up shows, Pod and Family, I mentioned them earlier on. I just want to shout out a couple of those particular shows that are particularly enjoyable.
Yeah.
The first of those, Rick and Paul Heal the World, a great little UK podcast. We also have Now That I'm Older. We spun their promo a few episodes ago, which is a couple of guys talking about what it's like to get older and reminiscing fondly on their youth.
Mm-hmm.
And also Classy Little Podcast, which is a great podcast coming out of the States, where Emily and her co-host James talk about all manner of things whilst drinking wine and eating cheese.
I've heard this. It's good.
It's a nice podcast, and they're an integral part of Pod and Family as well. So there we are. Coming up then on The Countdown the next 2 weeks, next week we are having on Gareth from Gareth's Random Ramblings and his better half Bex to talk about films that have musicians turned into actors. Which are the best films of that ilk? So that'll be a nice little segment as part of our show. It'll be great to welcome on another podcast as part of a crossover. And then the week after that, Wayne?
Week after that, we are reviewing Deadpool.
Yes, cannot wait.
I am absolutely looking forward to this. And on the back of that, we will be counting down the top R-rated action movies of all time. And I say R-rated meaning American R-rated. Over here we call it MA.
MA and sometimes R as well.
Sometimes yep. R as well, yep. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that because I love R-rated actions. That's yeah. To me, that's what makes it possibly good.
Definitely. I'm right there in your corner. Should be a great countdown, as should both the next 2 weeks. From both Wayne and I, thank you to all for joining us again this week. We hope you've enjoyed our little podcast and our countdown that we have provided. Hopefully you've got a movie, I should say, or two that you are now looking forward to seeing, as well as a whole bunch that you'll be avoiding, like the proverbial plague.
All right, folks. Well, till next week, have a great one. My name is Wayne.
My name is Paul.
Talk to you soon.
Cheers.
From the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Question 17. When choosing a seat at a largely empty movie cinema, do you...
A. Sit directly in front of another person. B. Sit right alongside a couple clearly enamored with one another. Or C. Take a seat away from other patrons that afford you a good view. If you answered A or B, fuck you!
For more useful cinema etiquette, join Paul and Wayne on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast at Podomatic on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.